All right, welcome to the podcast. Before I jump in to this story, I just want to welcome any of you that this is your first time listening. I'm all about sharing gritty, inspirational stories about life. Some of it stories from my time as a SEAL, my time in the civilian world, and other people's experience as well, real life stories and extracting some of the life lessons learned, some wisdom along the way, and you could apply that to your own life. If anything, just be entertained from the cool story. And it's like the title of my podcast, you know, somebody giving their last good fight along the way. So if you scroll through my episodes, you're going to find a ton of cool, useful content. Not just stories, but there's also kind of life lessons in there. How to get through seasons of pain in your life, how to get through failure. I have a series in there about running, a three-part series, how to become a better at running if you're looking to join the military or join some special operation team. There's all sorts of cool tips in there to get after it and running. What else is in there? I'm looking through it right now. There's stuff on self-discipline. There's just a lot of cool stuff that you can consume along with the story. So I try to sprinkle in some cool stories as well as just wisdom along the way. And these, I try to keep them bite-sized, 20 minutes or so or less, so you can listen to them on your drive to work. It's just me here. Don't usually have guests. I think I had a couple guests on. Didn't work out so well because I'm all the way out in Maui. So it's a little bit difficult to get them on the phone. But anyway, hope you enjoy this next episode. It's going to be a good one, so buckle up. It's titled The Kraken. Here we go. So there we were on the submarine. We were on our way to South Korea. We were due to link up with the Korean Navy SEALs and do interoperability training, which that just means, hey, let's operate with them. They operate with us. They see what we do. Maybe we share some tactics, that sort of thing. And we were on our deployment on a submarine. And on that submarine, we had a platoon of SEALs, 12 to 15 guys, and then a support element as well on there. Support element is divers. There's other things that and people that need to go along with us to help support all the operations and things like that. So we were deployed on the submarine, and on top of the submarine, there's what's called a dry deck shelter. If you look it up on Google, dry deck shelter operations submarine or Navy SEALs locking out of a submarine, well, that's how we get off the submarine. It's not just opening a hatch and then swimming out, right? And we can deploy our mini sub off of the submarine. It's not a classified thing. It's what it is. You can look it up on Google. And on the submarine that we were deployed on, there was two of these dry deck shelters, and they're huge. They're, I don't know, 20, 30 feet long. And so that's how we get from the submarine. We lock up into the dry deck shelter. If you can imagine that, if you're in the submarine, you got to go through these different lockout chambers and pressurize, into the dry deck shelter. Now, the dry deck shelter is normally, at the same atmosphere as the submarine is underwater. And so you could have the hatches open and climb up into the dry deck shelter. And inside the dry deck shelter, imagine it is like a big missile tube, but it lays horizontally on top of the submarine. And there's two of these back to back. And one of them, we would have our SEAL delivery vehicle, our little mini sub. And in the other dry deck shelter, we would have our Zodiacs. And we could deploy those and do operations with them and things like that. And so on this particular operation, we were linking up with, we were going to link up with the Korean Navy SEALs, better known as the ROK SEALs, Republic of Korea SEALs, and link up with them and do some stuff and then go back out to the submarine and then go off on the rest of our deployment. So now this is, it's no small operation to be on a nuclear submarine and all the things that need to happen to get us out into the water and then link back up with this sometimes days later. And that's kind of what the plan was here, was to we weren't going to use the submersible. We were going to use the Zodiacs to get onto shore, link up with the Korean SEALs, and go do our thing. And then we had to rendezvous back with the submarine. And the submarine's got all its own things going on, right? It has to do while it's also in support of what we're doing. And so there's a lot of coordination that happens, as you can imagine. We were about, gosh, I don't know exactly how far off the coast, but far enough to where the submarine felt comfortable going into what's called a hover position, which is kind of periscope depth for the submarine. And the submarine never stops underwater. It always is moving forward, and that's how it kind of steers and things like that. And it would be just below periscope depth, about 60 feet deep or so. And so it would cruise along for us to do our operations. And in order to do that, it had to do a lot of things. And it's, I guess, from what I hear from the crew and everybody that drives the sub. I'm not a submariner, so I don't know. If you're listening, you're a submariner, I'm sure you're laughing, but there, you know, there's a whole crew that drives this and flies the sub, whatever. And in order to hover or cruise along, and it takes a lot of skill. And you can be in a hover position where you're at 60 feet, and you can do what's called losing the bubble, meaning the submarine could just dive underwater, not underwater, but you're already underwater, but it could lose its bubble and sink to a deeper depth, if that makes sense. And if you have people out in the water column, the SEALs out there, our diving support out there on the back of the submarine underwater at 60 feet, kind of getting ready. Well, if you lose the bubble, then it's kind of an emergency, right? There's two things that happen. Either you get back in the dry deck shelter, or you leave the sub and you go to the surface. Now, there's all sorts of terrible things that could happen if that emergency arises. And we practice for that. And so the submarine would be underwater. We would lock up into the dry deck shelter. And then the dry deck shelter has to equalize to the outside pressure. And so it floods up with water. And then these big doors open up. And then we could do everything we needed to do to drag all of our equipment out. And while the submarine is flying along at about 60 feet, and when I say flying along, it's only going maybe a knot, maybe at the most 2 knots underwater. So it's pretty slow. Faster than you can swim, but it needs to move in order to steer and stay on bubble. Well, we had practiced this emergency. And when you lose, so they practice emergency, there would be this alarm and the sub would start to sink down and we would get off the sub and go to the surface and the sub would just recover, get back in line and then find us with a periscope and then pick us up and things like that. Anyway, trying to describe all that so you understand kind of all the stuff that goes on in order to get out into onto the back of the submarine and into the water column to what we need to do. So if that all makes sense, our operation for that evening was to lock out of the submarine with our Zodiacs from the submarine, get to the surface, and then rendezvous with the Korean Navy SEALs on land at like, I don't know, 3 or 4 in the morning. In order to do that, we have all of our Zodiacs inside the dry deck shelter. Now, of course, you're like, well, how are you going to have these big 12-foot-long Zodiacs with the 35-horsepower motors and all the things in order to – how are you going to get that from the submarine to the surface? Well, that's a huge undertaking. We have all the Zodiacs, and we took 4 of them at the time, and we have them deflated, and they're all stacked on top of each other. and they're on this kind of this cradle of sorts. If you imagine your oven, you know how you pull out the rack? Well, there's a rack inside that dry deck shelter where we would put everything, and the divers would pull that rack out once we wanted to deploy the Zodiacs. In order to get them to the surface, because they're deflated, we have a scuba tank bottle that's in each one of the Zodiacs, and you would open up the scuba tank, and that would fill up the Zodiacs. And when you fill them up, what do you think happens to them on the back of the submarine when they're down at 60 feet underwater? Well, they shoot to the surface, and that's a good thing, right? And there would be a line attached from the Zodiac when it got to the surface down to the back of the submarine, and so it wouldn't just float off. We'd be able to go up the line and get in the Zodiac. So that was our plan. And so it takes a number of hours to stage all of that stuff inside the dry deck shelter and get it all ready. The motors have to be inside these big dry bags, and all of that needs to be secured inside the Zodiac. And we secure them on this net that's inside the Zodiac, and we clip everything in, and we put our gear in there and all the stuff we need to do the operation. And so we have four SEALs per Zodiac going out, four boats, and everybody has their job, so to speak. You have the radio man, I'm the corpsman, you have the officer and the chief, and all those things. Well, on this particular night, we were supposed to launch at midnight. We were getting reports from the submarine that, hey, it's the sea state is pretty bad. When we hear that, of course, we're like, oh, whatever. It's not a big deal. Let's go. We just want to get off the submarine. I mean, there's not too much to do if you're not messing with your gear on the submarine. You're either eating all the food, you're working out in a cramped space, or you're messing with your buddies, or you're sleeping, right? And when I say messing with your buddies, everybody's doing pranks on everybody on the submarine, because it's so silly sometimes seeing us on the submarine or amidst all the submariners. And we kind of throw off the whole vibe on the boat. I mean, there's a whole rank and order, and of course we go around and we're half naked, and we're sleeping all day, and we're working at night, and we're eating our food. And so I don't know. It works, but it is what it is. Anyway, they're there in support of us, and we got to do what we need to do. Anyway, so from the submarine, from the officers, they're saying, hey, we got a pretty bad sea state. Not sure if we're going to be able to hold the bubble, be able to hover to release you guys. They're going to go a little bit further out from shore. And we said, okay, whatever. We're going to continue to get our gear all ready. And mind you, getting your gear ready means you're crawling through these, exactly what you see in the movies, right? These hatches that you have to open, you have to crawl through, and you're typically bonking your head on them. You're having to crawl through them, and it's super hot and sweaty in there. And it's a lot of effort to bring your bags up through multiple lockout chambers to get it inside this big dry deck shelter. And when I say big, it's still cramped because you have all your crap in there. You can barely stand up in there. And so while we're getting all our gear ready, they say, okay, well, the sea state is just barely on the edge of us being able to release you, but the operation is still a go. And so, all right, great. We are inside the dry deck shelter, and the plan and how the operations work is you close all the hatches to the submarine, right? And essentially, then you're locked out from the submarine, and you're inside the dry deck shelter. Inside there is all of our Zodiacs, all of our gear, all of us, and what we need to do next is you need to flood the dry deck shelter to equalize it with the pressure outside, or you're never going to open up the door, right? Inside at the front of the dry deck shelter is a dry deck shelter operator, and he is operating all of the valves and everything to equalize us to the outside pressure. And so he starts doing his thing. And we're all just kind of sitting there at that point because we just need to wait for this thing to flood up. It's not warm water over in Korea, if you don't know. It's pretty cold. And as it's slowly flooding up, right, the water is filling up and we're seawater and we're waiting for this. And it takes a long time to fill up this big area with water. It's not an instant thing. And so there's a lot of waiting around. I'm not sure how long. It just seemed like it took forever. We usually wear the dry suits, but we're wearing thicker wetsuits because we're gonna be above the water and eventually take off the wetsuits once we get over the beach. But we're sitting there, we're like, man, this is taking forever. And the water's slowly creeping up, and we're all kind of just looking at each other, kind of laughing, making faces. You're checking your gear, making sure it's good. And as the water slowly creeps up to your face and to your head, you're then gonna take a regulator and put it in your mouth. It's hooked to a scuba tank, and you're gonna be breathing open circuit, which means lots of bubbles. And then you're breathing on the open circuit. Everybody is, and everybody's giving the thumbs up. Okay. And you're clearing your mask and you're still waiting for this thing to fully go all the way to the top and then be equalized with the outside pressure. While we're all sitting there, the divers are there. And once it's equalized, they're undoing all of these massive bolts that are on the inside of this door. That's about 12 feet tall, maybe 10 feet tall and circumference. And so once they get all these bolts undone, which takes a while in itself. I mean, all this kind of time adds up. So I think we're in there for at least 90 minutes, if not 2 hours, to fully open the outside door. At that time, it's probably 1 a.m., and the outside door cracks open. And 60 feet underwater, we're not really worried about shining lights and trying to be really sneaky. There's chem lights underwater, glow sticks, and so we can see what's going on. And we're kind of just waiting there because they have their job to do. And they do it very well. And we wait for them to kind of pull out the cradle that has all of our zodiacs on it. And then we start to come out of the Drydeck shelter. Well, when I stepped onto the back of the Drydeck shelter, you could almost feel the ocean move. Because then you're still behind the dry deck shelter, meaning as the submarine is traveling forward through the water column, the water is going up over the front of the nose, over the dry deck shelter, and so you're kind of sheltered from the current. Like I said, the submarine is moving 1 to 2 knots. You can see the bioluminescence kicking off of the prop in the back of the sub. So it's kind of cool to see. And you're like, oh man, that's awesome. And so you kind of come out of the dry deck shelter and then hold on to the outside edge. And you want to get out of the way of the divers that are going to pull our gear out onto with that, like that big, like I mentioned, like you would pull a tray out of your oven. They're pulling this out of the back of the dry deck shelter, and we have our zodiacs on there. And we are standing there waiting for them to be, okay, we're all done. We're good. And that's kind of where we kind of get our stuff ready. Anyway, I remember looking over my shoulder and I'm holding on to the outside of the Drydeck shelter. I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool. How many people get to do this? You can see the bioluminescence kind of cruising off. It's pitch black underwater, right? It's like 1, 2 a.m. And I'll never forget. I looked forward and I'm like, whoa, how can I see the front of the submarine? Like it's pitch black, but it looks like it looks like stars are coming off it, or like these tentacles that are coming off it. Like we ran into this huge sea creature or octopus or giant squid or something. I'm like, what is that? And I kind of elbow one of my teammates who was next to me, and I point, and he looks at it. I can see him squinting his eyes and like, whoa, what is that? And these tentacle looking things were flowing off of the front part of the submarine that you're used to seeing when the submarine's on the surface, right? It has the wings on the side and it has the pilot house up there. Well, it's flowing off of that and coming back and kind of near where we are, but not close enough to touch. And we figured out what it was. We look closer and it's a huge net. The submarine had gone through a fishing net. It was massive. And it was flowing in the water because it was caught on the front of the submarine and it was kicking off all this bioluminescence. And it was like, whoa, this is, I already know this is sketchy. Like this is the beginning of this little training operation. And we've already run through a net with the submarine. They don't know that they ran through it, right? But anyway, so we focus back on what we need to do. The divers are done pulling the sled out. It's got all of our Zodiacs. We go down there. The first thing you do is you reach for the bottle that's hooked up to the deflated Zodiac and you open up the scuba bottle and that has hoses that inflate the Zodiac and it sends it to the surface with all of our gear. So we inflate the first one and it goes to the surface and it kind of disappears. Now remember, that's hooked to a line that is secured to the back of the submarine so it doesn't just float away. My buddy reaches down. He cracks the other scuba tank and it inflates. It goes to the surface. And as they go to the surface, well, the guys go with their Zodiac because you're assigned to each one of the Zodiacs. So the guys are taken off and I have the, I'm in the last one with a couple of my teammates, three other teammates. And so those guys are already up at the surface and you can't see the surface, right? It's pitch black. We crack ours. It goes up and for whatever reason, it definitely went up way faster than the other ones. Maybe we opened the bottle too fast or I'm not sure what happened, but it inflated and it shot to the surface. And it has all of our gear in it and all that kind of stuff. It's all secure. We're not worried about it, but we give the signal to the divers, hey, we're taking off. This is the last bit. And we take off. And take off meaning we slide up the line to go to the surface. And I poke my head above the surface. And it's right out of the movies, I swear. I look up and it's like we just were instantly transported into a typhoon, like hurricane situation. And as I pop my head up, it's like I'm in the trough of a wave and the next swell or the next wave out in the ocean where we were, remember we're 10, 15 miles out, is lifting us up in all of our boats, almost breaking over our heads, and then we're dropping down into the next trough. And I was like, shit, this is not good. I look over at my teammate and he's looking at me like, whoa, I cannot believe that we're getting released into this. And I look around for our boat and I don't see it at first. And I'm like, whoa, where's our Zodiac? I don't even see the other boats, which are all supposed to be connected to this line that's connected to the sub. Unbeknownst to me, they had released the line down to the submarine because the sea state was so bad that they had to get everybody back in the submarine. And I do a 360 in the water. So the four of us were now floating, treading water, looking around for a Zodiac because that's our means of transportation. That's what we're going to get in. That's all of our gear. The submarine is now gone. And I don't know what sea state it was, but it wasn't good. And, off the Korean coast, in the middle of the ocean, and just torrential downpour, big waves. And then I hear this sound off to my left of somebody throwing up. And I know who exactly that is because he gets terribly seasick, but he's supposed to take his pills before he goes out and apparently didn't take enough because he's already throwing up. I look over at my buddy, his name is Jerry, and I'm just like in disgust, like, I cannot believe you're already throwing up. We just got to the surface. Like, golly. So he's throwing up. I do another 360, and it turns out the reason I'm not seeing our Zodiac is because it's flipped upside down. Normally, it's going to come to the surface and be right side up. Well, it's flipped over, It's inflated, but that's a great thing. But it's upside down, and all of our gear is clipped to this net that's inside, and for good reasons, for that reason, in case it flips over. Well, in order to get that boat flipped back over, we have to swim underneath the Zodiac and unclip one side of the net, so all of our gear and those big motors are all hanging on this net. And the procedure for flipping your boat back over is there's lines inside the boat that you have to throw over the top, and then you have to stand on top of the Zodiac and then pull it back over, and then you get all your crap and then pull it into the boat. And so that's just taking a ton of time. My buddy Jerry is almost useless. He's throwing up everywhere. He's green. And we get the boat flipped over, not sure how, in the sea state that we were in. I'm not sure where the other Zodiacs are. And start getting all of our gear into the boat. And we're just, in, I wouldn't say survival mode, but we're just like in, this is terrible mode. This is, we can't communicate with anybody at that point because our radios are in our dry bags and things like that. We get all of our gear on the boat. I pull Jerry into the boat. He's just like curls up into a ball in the center of the boat. And I just look at him like, oh, Jerry, worthless. And we get the rest of the stuff in there. Well, now what do you have to do? There's no engine on the boat. You got to pull the engines out of the dry bags and put them on the boat. And that's a 2 or 3 man operation to get that on there and secure it. We go through that. Of course, the engine doesn't start up, and just like, God, could anything else go wrong? The engine's not starting up. All right, let's pull that one off. Let's put the little 35 horsepower on. Less power, but it's your backup motor. We put that on there. It takes a while. We get it started. And at that moment, we're like, okay, I feel like we now have power. And where's the shore at? I have no idea. We got to look at our compass, kind of get our bearings. That's when we found the other Zodiac. Well, thankfully, we'd kind of been drifting together, and the other Zodiac wasn't too far away. It was still trying to get its motor started unsuccessfully. And you could tell the guys all were just doing everything they could to get this engine started because we needed power. The other two Zodiacs had linked up. They're good to go. They know where to go. And we go over to help the Zodiac that doesn't have any power. Engines won't start for whatever reason. We try everything, and then we go into, all right, what's plan B? Well, yeah, we always have a contingency plan. We probably have 7 of them, and we pull out the tow rope, which sucks, right? We have a 35 horsepower motor that doesn't move a 12-foot Zodiac with 4 guys and a ton of gear very fast, let alone tow somebody. And it looks like we're a solid 10 miles off the coast, and just we're moving at a snail's pace in these massive waves. Now, the waves aren't breaking on us, but they're huge swells, and trying to navigate between that. Just hours out there in the water trying to get close to shore. Well, as we get close to shore, a few hours later, we're like, okay, well, we have one area we're supposed to go in, and we're used to the swells kind of not hitting our boat, but lifting us up and dropping us back down. But then I started to hear this noise, like a crack, almost like a boom and a sharp crack. And we get lifted up again, like the swell, but we're on the back, unbeknownst to us, we're on the back of a massive breaking wave that is cracking in front of us, probably 3 times the size of our boat. And thankfully, we were on the back of this thing, and it cracks into the water. We spin around, and all of us look at each other like, oh, crap, because who knows, the next wave might be right in front of us. We spin the boat around with our little puny 35-horsepower motor, and what do you do, right? We're in a surf zone, unbeknownst to us, and we turn around and we just make it over this next wave that's about to crack and make it over the top. And we're like, wow, we got way off course. We were supposed to be over here, but we almost landed on the rocks over here. All right, it doesn't always go as planned. Anyway, we find where we're supposed to go in and make our way in and link up with the SEALs, the Korean SEALs. And they're kind of looking at us like, guys, you guys should have been here so long ago. And we're looking at them like, you have no idea what just happened. And so we continue on with the whole operation. We link up with them for about a day and a half. And then we need to come back out and get back out to the submarine, okay? And to wrap this whole thing up and how gnarly it was, our boats are just beaten to crap. We pull them up on shore, right? And we kind of stow them away, and we come back later. And the other engines on the other boat aren't working very well. And so we have this long kind of extract off of the beach, back out on the water, and then we got to go meet up with a submarine, which you think is really easy, like linking up with a submarine, but the sub was cruising around at periscope depth trying to find us in the middle of the night. And in order to link up with us, we need to do, you know, get communications with them. Well, of course, our radios aren't working. Nothing's working. This whole thing is just a big goat rope. It is absolutely rat nest times 10. And everybody's pissed. Everybody's tired, hungry. We've been out for, I think this is the second or third. Yeah, this is the beginning of the third night. So we're ready to get back on the submarine. But everybody knows on the Zodiac, we're hours and hours away from even getting close to getting any sleep or food, just to get back on the submarine. So anyway, submarine's looking for us. It finally, it seems like it sees us. With the periscope, it's flashing at us. We're flashing back, and we finally link up with it. And when we link up with the submarine at night, in order to get back in, what do you think you have to do? You got to do that whole operation again. Thankfully, the divers, we'll deflate the boats, and then they'll pull them down and lock everything in. So at the time, our commanding officer was out there on the submarine, and for whatever reason, still don't know to this day, he required us to breath hold from the surface back down into the submarine. And I said, well, yeah, you guys are Navy SEALs. It's not a big deal. Well, after a few days of getting beat up, you know, linking up with a submarine, all the stuff we did with the Korean SEALs, and then getting back out, you're pretty tired. And on the surface of the water at night, going down into the submarine, breath hold, into the dry deck shelter, and 60 feet to the back of the submarine, and then another 15, 20 feet into the dry deck shelter at night. There's a rope that goes all the way down inside of it, but it's not easy. And so one by one, each of us took turns going, all right, man, here we go, taking a big breath and just pulling down the line into the dry deck shelter. And then inside the dry deck shelter, you're reaching for one of the regulators, the scuba bottles, and breathing off of that. And all of us were just pissed that we had to do that. So we get down inside there, and we, in order to get from the dry deck shelter back into the submarine, you have to get in, you have to go inside this smaller chamber that'll lock you back into the sub, right? Because the dry deck shelter is open to the ocean. The divers have to do all their thing. And I'll never forget getting inside of the lock-in chamber or lockout chamber. There's four or five of us in there, and there's a chamber operator who's inside there operating the chamber to lock you back into the sub so you can get back in there and you know, get stow all your gear and go get food. Well, our crazy commanding officer was in there, and he was the chamber guy. He wanted to make sure that we had breath hold back into the sub and got back in there. And, you know, as hardcore as that sounds, we're not happy. We're sitting in there, and then we see him, and we're like, oh, this guy, I'm going to kill this guy. So we get everything back in there. Future ops doing that. We did that a lot. We actually disobeyed his command. We went around him, and we had the divers sneak these little tiny, what's called pony bottles, up to us. And we got back into the submarine using those pony bottles because I guess the risk and holding your breath and going back into the submarine, it was just kind of silly. Anyway, there it is. Lessons learned, always have a plan B or a plan C, because you never know what's going to happen. And especially on that sort of thing. Hope you enjoyed the story, and stay tuned for the next one. All right, see you.